Hey guys, hope you're all doing well. It's Nicole coming to you live from Nicole's Nook in New York, New York. It's May 13th, so I'm back at it again with another one of our weekly Monday episodes. But today, we're going to have to fasten our seatbelts because we're going to be touching on a topic that sits a little heavier than our usual topics. But it's something that I learned about recently that I feel definitely needs to have some light shed on and should be brought to our attention and talked about way more than it already is. So without further ado, let's jump straight into it. So as you're probably aware, sexual assault and harassment have been in the news a lot lately. But what does sexual assault actually mean? It's actually harder to define than you'd think. According to the United States Department of Justice, sexual assault is any type of sexual contact or behavior that occurs without the explicit consent of the recipient reporting them. Sexual assault is basically an umbrella term that includes sexual activities such as rape, fondling, and attempted rape. Sexual assault can take many different forms, but the one thing that remains the same is that it's never the victim's fault. Now that we have a pretty clear understanding of what sexual assault is, I'd like to shift to our main topic of sexual assault in the military. The military exists to defend the nation. That is its mission. To accomplish that mission, leaders must ensure that those who serve under them are combat ready. But when sexual assault becomes part of the picture, how are the people that are supposed to defend the nation expected to continue, let alone do their job? Service members are trained for situations where it's essential to trust both enlisted members of the unit and the chain of command completely. For someone that's been sexually assaulted in the military, it completely destroys that trust. Today I'll be talking to you guys about two separate survivors and their experience dealing with what happened to them. Meredith Mathis is a medically retired Army logistics turned public affairs officer, having served in OEF in 2009 to 2010 and 2012. She was a brand new lieutenant. He was her company commander, a senior captain nearly 10 years older than her. According to Mathis, she was young, naive, and reeked of insecurity, which caused her to be an easy target for manipulation. Her commander was a cunning narcissist, both sadistic and charming. Initially, his abuse was verbal and emotional, but then, after a company basketball game, he lured her to his home and she followed him. Eventually, he pushed her down on his couch, surrounded by smiling portraits of his wife and daughters. And she tried to crawl away, afraid and confused, but her mind felt completely disconnected from her body. However, she thought it couldn't be rape. Rape happens in dark corners, at alcohol-fueled parties, or while walking to your car alone at night. She thought it would never happen to her because she would kick and scream and fight before someone hurt her, right? So she decided what had happened to her was her responsibility. The verbal and sexual abuse continued for the next year and a half, including the 12 months they were deployed to Afghanistan. Mathis was suicidal and devastatingly alone and carrying a heavy burden. And it wasn't until almost 7 years later that she had the courage to share what she'd been through with a small group of women at a healing retreat for combat veterans. Sharing with them allowed her to see that what had happened was not her fault, rather the actions of a sick man. In the case of Jared Wright, there were a series of incidents in 2010 when he and other members of his troop were physically and sexually assaulted by fellow soldiers, with the approval of NCOs and officers as a welcome to the unit. On the first day, they ripped me out of my room when I was on Skype with my family, held me face down, and then lashed me with a belt 23 times as a part of a birthday ritual, Wright told Army Times. And when I got up, the company commander was there. The first sergeant was there, coming to shake my hand. The whole company was out there. However, then it escalated. Wright said it had happened to his roommate first, so they started locking their door at night. But the one time they left it unbolted, a group busted in looking for Wright. They held him down on his bed, grabbed his genitals and inserted fingers in him. At first, nothing was said, like what, according to Defense Department statistics, happens with more than 80% of male military sexual assault survivors. However, when it kept happening to others in the unit, the survivors stepped up. The vast majority of male survivors don't come forward, Wright said, and some because they haven't been trained that those extreme hazing rituals are just as much a rape as anything else. There hasn't been that welcoming environment, not only with command climate, just the way the information is presented, he said. Changing that culture starts with the way men in a unit talk to each other. Like Wright says, it has to start with the basic climate of what behaviors we tolerate just in our language. And then people watching the way that they treat each other. As a people, we must ask ourselves, why is this occurring? Why does it keep happening? And what can we do to put an end to this once and for all? Sexual assault in the U.S. military is something that stems from a plethora of things, including entitlement and military culture as a whole. We need to recognize that this sense of entitlement comes from hyper-masculine perspectives that make men feel as though they have the right to sex. The fixation on power and authority contribute a lot to sex role stereotyping, hostility towards women, and rape myth acceptance overall. This, combined with the emphasis the military puts on objectification, leaves a lot of room for psychological and social distancing. Because male and female soldiers are taught to objectify other humans and limit their empathy, this makes it easier to kill other humans. However, when that thinking is applied to fellow service members, it can lead to making sexual assault easier to execute and legitimize. In order for change to happen, there needs to be a broadened understanding of the root causes and various myths of sexual assault, the military cultural factors that may contribute, and the awkward issues that surround sexual assault, which are frequently dismissed, like the predominance of male sexual assault inside the military. Alright guys, I'm gonna leave you all with this. I really hope this incentives you all to start an open dialogue around the uncomfortable and around the factors that contribute to sexual assault in the U.S. military, because it's something that deserves more attention as it pertains not only to our military, but to our entire country and the kind of culture we want to perpetuate. Thanks for listening, and make sure to tune in next Monday for a brand new episode of Nicole's Neck.